Accession number 9085, roll number 1.
Brigadier Cox, reel 1. Which unit were you serving with in the spring of 1940?
The 2nd Battalion of the South Wales Borderers.
And what rank did you hold at that
time? I was a captain and company commander.
When did you first hear that you were going to Norway?
I think about the end of March 1940. You will remember the Germans had invaded Norway in March 1940, and we had already been warned for duty before that happened, because I think of the fact that the Russians had invaded Finland, thank you. Now we're on again, are we? Yes, well, that's the odd.
How did you actually set about going to Norway?
The battalion, which was then stationed in Londonderry, was moved to Glasgow, and embarked in the liner Reina del Pacifico on the 10th of April. We had previously been transferred from our existing formation to the 24th Guards Brigade before embarkation.
Were you fully equipped?
We were fully equipped for Arctic conditions with heavy greatcoats and a lot of heavy equipment, which subsequently was an embarrassment. We had so much heavy uniforms. And
what about the strength of the battalion? Were you up to strength?
We were up to strength, as far as I recall.
And what was the morale like?
Oh, very good. Very good.
And the crossing?
We had no problems during the voyage that I can recall. And we arrived in north of Narvik at small port of Harstad, H-A-R-S-T-A-D, north of Narvik, which was to become the base for the operation.
Can you describe what you saw when you first arrived?
When we first arrived in the early morning, it was a wonderful sight. The mountains were covered in snow, but the sun was shining and the sea was calm and altogether far from warlike. The Navy were there, and I recall two destroyers tying up alongside the liner, one on each side, and in particular I remember the Ardent, the destroyer Ardent, which on which we subsequently disembarked, and I remember the crew moving round. And we leant over the side in the sunshine, as if a sort of holiday atmosphere, when one German plane came over and bombed, missed by quite a long way, But it brought us back to reality. We then disembarked with all our kit and marched for some way. And during the march, I recall we were bombed from a great height, and missed us by a long way, but frightened us a bit. We were then housed in large Norwegian barns and houses, and planned for the capture of Narvik town. But before that could take place, a blizzard descended, and you could hardly see a yard or two in front of you, and the blizzard continued for some days, and the attack on Narvik town was cancelled. Very, in my view, very fortunately, because it would have been a very difficult operation. Narvik was a difficult place to capture. It had, the town itself was sheltered from the fjord by a high feature, and it would have been a very difficult operation.
Did you know anything about the German strength at Narvik?
At that stage, I personally knew nothing about the strength, the enemy strength. As I've said, the operation was cancelled, and the next thing that happened was that we were transported by the Navy to a place called Skomnes, Skjomnes, south of Narvik, and we were landed by the Navy unopposed. The country was very difficult in that there were no features. There was deep snow off the track and slush, a foot of slush on the track, which meant that we were confined to the track, and that Without skis or snowshoes, we were quite incapable of operating off the track. However, my company, which was the advance guard, I was told that I would be supported by the French Chasseurs d'Alpin, who would be on my right flank, that is to say, the furthest away from the sea, fjord. But there was no sign of them, and I proceeded on my way in the direction of Ankenes Peninsula, which was my objective, opposite Narvik, the narrow fjord which separated the Ankenes Peninsula from Narvik town itself. in due course, a French ski patrol came alongside me, and the officer leading the patrol would have gone on had I not stopped him, I remember, and asked him in my schoolboy French about his orders, and he told me that he was proceeding on the right flank, and he had no further instructions.
What was the morale of the men like at this time? You talked about the cold and the blizzards and so on. How were they standing up to the conditions?
Oh, very well, very well. I don't remember any complaints or any discomfort, in fact.
Had you had any further attacks by German aircraft?
No further attacks, no, at that stage.
What about Allied aeroplanes? Were they present at all whilst you were in the Narvik area?
I saw no Allied planes at all at that stage. When we were on this Ankenes Peninsula for some time, and I do not recall seeing any aircraft, except on one occasion when a German aircraft bombed a Polish destroyer. I didn't know it was Polish at the time, but it was in fact a Polish destroyer, which was circling in the fjord on our left flank.
Did it hit it?
I didn't see it hit, but I'm told it was in fact hit. I never saw it hit. There were several other Royal Navy ships in the fjord which put up a tremendous barrage. But as far as I know, the aircraft wasn't hit. And that was all I saw of that occasion. The Germans attacked us from while we were in a position on the Ankenes Peninsula, and it was the getting towards the time of the midnight sun, so it was daylight at 2 a.m. on the morning of the 1st, 2nd of May, one of my patrols visiting Ankenes village opposite Narvik ran into a considerable number of Germans, and after a short hide and seek among the houses, succeeded in withdrawing without loss. Some 2 hours later, a large number of enemy, including ski troops, advanced against my company, who were holding the left of the battalion line. It was a deliberate dawn attack, although unaccompanied by artillery support, against positions which the Germans may have believed to be weakly held owing to the withdrawal of my advance platoon on the previous day. The attack began at about 3 o'clock, and the midnight sun, as I've said, did not rise until a fortnight later, and visibility was restricted to about 100 yards or even less near the foreshore, where a light mist prevailed. the first attack, which was probably intended as a diversion, developed from the right over the mountains and was carried out by ski troops firing tracer ammunition. Their white cloaks made it difficult to pick them out, but their, fortunately for us, their fire was extremely inaccurate, and countless bullets whistled harmlessly overhead into the sea. But while this attack was in progress, a naval destroyer, attracted by the noise, moved forward from her usual position off Emmaus Point and inquired by signal whether all patrols were in. On receiving an affirmative reply from me, the ship came in close to the shore and opened up with everything she possessed. It was then just light enough for the troops to see the main German attack coming in on the left flank. My left forward platoon was well equal to the situation and supported materially and morally by the vigilant Navy, we were at no time hard pressed, and heavy and rapid fire demoralized the Germans, who dropped their weapons and fled to cover in barns and in a wood.
Did you actually see them flee?
I'm sorry?
Did you actually see them flee?
Run? Yes. Well, yes, yes, I saw them disappearing against the snow. They left a considerable amount of equipment, which we captured, including mortars, Tommy guns, and a wireless set. The history recalls that a significant feature of the action was that among the German dead, wounded, and prisoners, not a single officer or senior NCO was found.
Did you investigate the dead yourself?
Oh, yes, yes.
In what kind of numbers were the bodies?
We found some may have been removed. We found about as far as I remember, it was about 10 or a dozen, and that was the end of that particular action.
Did you bring in any wounded prisoners?
Yes, we brought in some a prisoner or two and returned them to town headquarters.
Were they badly wounded?
No.
What was their demeanour? Were they frightened or defiant? Or?
They were surly, but more frightened, I think, than anything else.
How were they treated?
We treated them normally and dispatched them back to town headquarters. What happened to them after that, I've no idea.
By normally, do you mean well?
Oh, yes.
What happened to you after that?
On the 16th of May, my company was relieved by Polish troops, and subsequently, we embarked in the cruiser HMS Effingham and proceeded south in the direction of Bodo, B-O-D-O. On on the 17th of May in the evening, there was a frightful crash, and I personally thought that we had been torpedoed. Much later, I was to realize that a torpedo was a very different matter. The ship remained stationary and upright, and we had in fact struck an uncharted rock, as it was described, and her bottom was torn out. The captain ordered all watertight doors to be closed, and so we were unable to go below to retrieve our kit. Subsequently, the captain ordered abandon ship, and a destroyer came alongside and took us off. There were no casualties, as far as I remember. We were then taken back to Harshed without our heavy equipment. And the Effingham, the first British cruiser to be lost in the war, was subsequently, I believe, torpedoed by our own side and sunk to avoid capture by the Germans. We were then re-equipped and subsequently, on the 24th of May, we proceeded to Bodo by puffers, as they were called. They were, in fact, Norwegian fishing boats with small outboard motors. Each, not outboards, small motors, each ship, each boat being holding one platoon in the hold. And we proceeded towards Bodo in the hope that we should be mistaken for harmless Norwegian fishing fleet. And in fact, this was the case. The only incident I recall on that particular journey was seeing a destroyer upside down on the rocks. This was the destroyer in which Captain Warburton Lee commanded during the naval battle for Narvik, the naval battle of Narvik. Was awarded a posthumous VC.
What was the reaction of the men when they saw the ship?
I don't recall any reaction.
Was there any sense of shock?
I can't recall any action, except for my own reaction was, rather sad to see it. I didn't, of course, actually at the time. That's all by the way.
So did you actually arrive at Bodo?
Yes, we arrived at Bodo. Arrival in Bodo, my company relieved a company of the Scots Guards.
What was the situation at Bordeaux? Did it look damaged?
At that stage, it looked undamaged. But shortly afterwards, a large flight of German aircraft came over and bombed the town with incendiaries. And as nearly all the buildings were of wood, the whole, my recollection was that the whole town was in flames. And there were we sitting in the at the top of a hill, surrounded by flames. After a
Did the population stay in the town, or did they get out?
As far as I can recall, the whole population of the town departed, and I cannot recall seeing any Norwegian civilians there, except for one, and that one was the owner, apparently the owner of the house in which company headquarters was situated, on the top of a hill above Bodø. On arrival there, I had put my on arrival in the sitting room, I had put my steel helmet on top of a male bust on a table, and as I was very tired, I lay down on a sofa with my boots on. Shortly afterwards, a man, a Norwegian who was evidently the owner of the house, returned and expressed displeasure at my battle bowler being on his father's bust and my dirty boots on his sofa. We expressed surprise at his surprise in view of the fact that the whole town was in flames and the Germans were advancing. However, that incident did not interfere with our general friendly relations with Norwegians.